coming to get you, Barbara.
I don't know what you come to do, but I come to praise name.
Because you'll never be anything but a common frump whose father lived over a grocery store and whose mother took in washing.
Hey, everybody, how's it going? Welcome to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. In the studio with me, oh, look, to my left, I have film critic and host of Switchblade Sisters. It's the one and only, my friend, sometimes it snows in April, April Wolf. April, what's good with you?
What's good with me is something that I'll reiterate from our little live show is that I stumbled upon an interview between Kathy Acker and the famed feminist Kathy Acker and the Spice Girls.
Yeah.
And it is...
I am so loving that.
Please read this interview. It's back in The Guardian from 97, and it is all of them meeting in Hell's Kitchen after, like, a photo shoot.
For the cover of Vogue.
Yeah, where they get to talk about their version of paradise and hell and, like philosophical things that and apparently Kathy Acker, who came in with, like, kind of a chip on her shoulder, was just like, oh, these girls are okay at the end. And I was like, what? So you guys got to read that.
That's what's up. You heard the voice of our other co-host there, film reviews editor at The Wrap, El Mero Mero de Navidad, 24/7, 365. It is Mr. Alonso Duralde. Alonso, ¿cómo está? What's good?
Oh, it's all good. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt April, but we were talking about the Spice Girls. I get very excited.
Yeah.
yes.
What is good is out this week on DVD, featuring the handiwork of our good friend Elliot Kalin from the Max Fun podcast, The Flophouse, who joined us a few months ago. Season 11 of Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Yes.
Yeah, I saw that. That's so excited. It's
I
so
know.
Good.
I'm a nerd for physical media, so, like, yeah, I watched it on Netflix, but now I own it. I can touch it in my hands. It's exciting.
Ownership is cool.
Yes. And speaking of Max Fun People, hosted by the great Jonah Ray.
Yes. So, mm-hmm. I was about to ask you, how did you handle being around Jonah Ray at
he
the
was
Max
so
Fun Finale?
Nice.
He's the best.
Oh my
Jonah's
God.
Jonah's great.
So nice.
Yeah. Yeah. He is.
Great
yeah,
dude.
Is. Yeah. He is.
Great, great network. Great podcasting.
We're awesome.
I'm going to give a quick shout out to Jonah. I posted a picture of Isai Morales from La Bamba on Instagram today, and his caption was just he draw a good Woody Woodpecker. And I was like, that's why Jonah's my guy, yo. That's why Jonah's my guy. We have a special guest. You quickly heard his voice earlier.
I couldn't resist the urge to shout, to get emotional about that Spice Girls interview. I love it.
Oh, I wish you would. Let it out, man. This is a safe place. This is a safe place. What I learned is if you don't have anything spice to say, don't say anything at all, Ricky.
That's wise of you.
I was a little too much, I think, on Friday with my opinions on Spice World. But ladies and gentlemen, we have a special guest with us today, writer and co-host of Super Gay. I want to know if he's with us today, right out the jungle, the brothers, De La Soul, on a roll, black medallions, no gold, it is Johnny Jungle Guts, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh my gosh, what an incredible intro that was. That was great.
Thank you. I work on them very much.
You should sell those.
You're the hype man.
What's good with you, Johnny? Welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. What's good with me is tomorrow, in the 1,000th issue of Action Comics, where Superman debuted many thousands, 1,000 issues ago, Superman will be returning to wearing his red underpants on the outside of his clothes.
Ooh.
And that is a small but real pleasure for me.
yeah.
That we're getting back into that.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
That moment.
It's the underruization of America.
Oh my God.
Ricky, what's good?
Oh my God.
Oh
my God. I got so distracted by
a
typo.
I was mentally jumping ahead. And
Now I kind of love basking in it. Now I'm just it's on the way. I'm all good.
Moment.
I'm all good. Absolutely. Oh, what's good is I'm driving here, and sometimes I enjoy, you know, just sitting in traffic, and sometimes it does just drive me absolutely insane. But my shuffle playlist saved me again with the song Truth by Kamasi Washington. Guys, sometimes I listen to jazz music. Ooh. I don't want to be. Yes.
Oh my God, I didn't know you went to college.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did. It took me 6 years, but that's
such
old.
Corona.
And it's just that it's the album I think came out about 3 years ago, and it's just a great 10 minutes and about 18 seconds. Of, well, you know, earlier we were talking about Sun Ra before mm-hmm. we started recording. I would put this song in the same kind of world of Sun Ra,
right.
Which just has like this like really great like smooth flow to it, and then this chorus of voices just kind of have like this lovely chant in the background. That song puts a goddamn smile on my face, so I feel great right now, y'all. And that's
whatever it takes.
It's the little things in life, bro. It's the little things. Hey, y'all, on today's episode, we are going to be talking about the new film starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson. That is his Christian name. The film Rampage. Plus, Drea will be joining us. Drea, the dope rhyme sayer. She's going to be joining us because she's going to be doing an interview with the star of the indie film, The Writer, Brady Jandro. And as always, at the end of the show, we'll have our staff picks. But first, it's time for our news roundup game called It a Dick, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Here's how it works. I will read a news blurb or headline. April, Alonzo, or Johnny will jump in with their take by answering these two questions. Is this important? Do I care? All right, we are starting off with, Hey, guys, is this important? Do you all care about this? Russell Crowe announced back in March that he'd be selling off some memorabilia from his films at an April divorce auction. Now, one of the items that was being sold was his old-timey jockstrap from the movie Cinderella Man. But if you're looking to buy that piece for a loved one, you are too late, and I will let John Oliver explain why.
Now, you should know that there has been some speculation out there that we were the ones who bought that jockstrap. And I will admit, it does sound like something that we would do. You know, buy Russell Crowe's jockstrap and send it to one of the last remaining blockbusters in Alaska. Even that sentence is absolutely incredible to say out loud. The bad news is, we didn't do it. I'm sorry, it wasn't us. We didn't buy it. We did, though. Except we did. We absolutely did. Are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained? Is this important? Do you all care?
I am less interested in Russell Crowe's jockstrap than I used to be, admittedly. But I love that John Oliver bought it, and I love that they're sending it to one of the last blockbusters for a Planet Hollywood-style tourism attraction.
That, I mean, that's one of my favorite things. The video store up in Portland had some like movie memorabilia that I used to love to look at, you know, in the glass cases while I was perusing. And it just makes it such a cool experience. So I like that people are going to go to video stores and that they're going to have this weird fucking memorabilia.
Up your game, idiots. That's all I'm saying.
I know.
Remember the Blockbuster Awards?
Oh, God.
Oh, yes.
We should bring that back. We should have just a little version of that in Alaska.
Yeah.
And the Cable Ace Awards. I miss those.
The Cable Ace Awards. I used to think those were important.
They weren't.
What? Hey, y'all, Comic-Con is done, y'all. Right now, it is all about WakandaCon. And guess where the first one's going to be? And you say Shaft City? That's where I stay. In Chicago, y'all. According to Nerdist, a trio of siblings from Chicago are starting their own convention to celebrate the world of Wakanda called WakandaCon. David Ali and Matt Barthwell say that the convention is, quote, a celebration of Afrofuturism, tech, and black superheroes in film, gaming, television, and comic books. That's what's up. Is this important? Do y'all care?
This is going to make so much fucking money.
It's all of the money.
This is going to make so much fucking money. You look at that description and you're like, oh my God, why the fuck didn't someone have like an Afrofuturism in tech conference in the first place?
Oh, yeah.
I can't believe that this is the first time, but wow, it's brilliant.
I went on the website for WakandaCon and I noticed that all the organizers had sort of named what Wakandan tribe they were a part of. Like, one of the organizers was in the River tribe, and one of the other organizers was in the Jabari tribe. So it seems like they're doing, like, some light LARPing, maybe. It's almost like Harry Potter, where, you know, you're Hufflepuff or you're...
Yes. Maybe the lanyards will be color-coded somehow.
Yes.
That is so great. That is
yeah,
so good.
You know people are going to be walking around, like, I mean, just black excellence everywhere. Just everywhere. It's going to be so great.
Okay, what about the white people who come?
Well, I mean, it's going to be adorable that you're there.
I mean, sure, I'm not going because that's like a thing I don't want to open right now.
It's going to be like that scene in Girls Trip where, you know, Regina Hall tells what's her face? I'm forgetting now. The white lady in the movie. Like,
oh yeah,
you can come. You can enjoy this. Here are the rules. You know.
Yeah.
In fact, I want Girls Trip 2 to be set at WakandaCon.
Oh,
can we make
that
happen?
Amazing.
That's amazing.
Is Girls Trip 2, is that a go? Is that happening?
I think so.
I will give them all my money.
It must be.
I think that the writer already signed on
okay,
for it.
Okay, solid. And hey, if you're in Chicago, WakandaCon takes place from August 3rd through the 5th, 2018 at the Hilton Downtown Chicago. And a weekend pass will cost you just over $35. That's affordable, yo.
Oh, that's a steal.
I'm just excited for all the other Afro-futurist properties that might get a real come up from the success of this movie. Like, who knows what we could see in future film.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, definitely. If studio chiefs are being like, "I get me a Black Panther," then that, you know, time to dust off that script.
Yep.
You know, I know, Ricky, you've had your Whitey's on the Moon screenplay ready to go.
It's the reason I'm wearing the shirt right now.
It's like, ask me about my script.
Now this last one here isn't really important. Do you all care? Because we're going to be talking about just somebody real quick. This past week, we lost one of the great directors, Miloš Forman. He's famous for One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Amadeus. He won Best Director for both of those. He also directed Ragtime, The People vs. Larry Flint, Man on the Moon, many others. He passed away at the age of 86 over the weekend. How important was Miloš to y'all? How much do you care about his body of work? Any favorites?
I love Hair a lot.
Oh, all right. Yes.
I think that's a really terrific musical that, you know, it's not the kind of stage version that necessarily loans itself to what the cinematic adaptation would have been, but I think he pretty much nailed it. He's got a really interesting story. I mean, you know, he was part of this group of filmmakers, the Czech New Wave in the late 60s. Mark Harris tweeted over the weekend, because he's working on a book about Mike Nichols, and apparently when the Soviets came into Czechoslovakia in 68 and Forman was trying to come to the United States, the DGA was not being helpful, because they were like, not enough American directors have work. We don't want to start importing foreign ones. And Mike Nichols, who was himself an emigre, literally had to, like, go, you know, appeal to individual members of the DGA board before they finally, like, helped him get over here.
I also enjoyed Hair because it hits a lot of things that I love. Music.
Hair.
Hair. I love a lot of Hair. And, I mean, obviously, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest was very influential. As much as I want it, like, it's kind of like a cheesy thing to be like, that's my favorite, but it's a fucking good movie.
It is.
It's a great ensemble cast. Everyone is amazing in it, and it's so memorable. And I keep thinking about him doing Man on the Moon, though. What a weird
movie.
Weird fucking movie.
Weird movie.
Well, you know, he did two films with that were written by Kira Zuzki and Alexander. They also wrote People versus Larry Flint.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that was definitely my introduction to him and maybe my favorite film of his, because it's Courtney Love and sort of the height of her power. The original Harley Quinn as Althea Flint. Yeah, I love it. And say what you want about, I don't really know that much about Larry Flint. He does not seem like a saint, but I know that he's currently offering $10 million to anyone who has information to impeach Donald Trump.
Yep.
So I have to applaud at least that.
Yeah, there's a lot in the con category on Larry Flint,
yeah,
but
mm-hmm,
you cannot dispute that he's definitely an important First Amendment warrior. And as Forman said, having survived, you know, the Iron Curtain, he said, you know, they always came for the pornographers first. You know, the intellectuals came later, but first it was the pornographers. And
right,
so that's why he really related to Flint's story.
April, I have the very generic answer. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest is one of the greatest movies of all time. Like, I just remember seeing that in college, just being like, wanting to, like, stand up and cheer at the scene where McMurphy's not allowed to watch
The baseball game.
And then he just makes up the baseball game right there. Like, that's just, like, the epitome of like when you're a kid and your mom tells you you can't do something because she's your mom and you just listen to her, when your teacher yells at you and tells you, and then you finally get to see the guy be like, oh, you know what? I got a loophole for this. And then just goes off and everybody like slowly coming over to watch him. Like, that's just a goddamn great scene, yo. I could watch that on the regular.
It's very uplifting.
Right?
It is.
It is.
It's like, it's the kind of scene that you would, that you, I think, that would get from an American immigrant, too. Like, the kind of person who's just like, well, you know, fuck you and these rules. Like, I'll just make up my own thing. I'll do my own shit.
That was my first R-rated movie.
Is that right? That's what's up. That's what's up. Hey, we are going to take a break. When we come back, we will be talking about Rampage. You're listening to Who Shot You?
Are you tired of trying to keep up with the news cycle?
Is bad stuff happening too fast for you to process?
Don't you wish there was an easy way to find out about only the most important info you need?
Hi, we're Lisa.
And Emily. Why don't you try our podcast, Baby Geniuses?
On each episode of our podcast, we discuss a weird Wikipedia page, such as
flatulence humor,
Clamato,
Catalan witches,
Clippy, the Microsoft Office helper,
death during consensual sex,
and the talking mongoose.
We ask each other stupid questions.
If you got a packet with like 300 seeds in it, what kind of plant would you choose the seeds to be?
That felt like you were assigned to ask me a question and there were certain words you weren't allowed to use.
We talk about Martha Stewart, her pony, and other celebrity horse news. Ben Chunch.
Every other week on Maximum Fun.
Baby Geniuses.
Welcome back to Who Shot You? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining me in the studio are
April Wolf,
Alonso Duraldi,
Johnny Jungle Guts.
Now, today we are talking about, which, help me out, everybody. Are we talking about Rampage? Or are we talking about Rampage?
Rampage.
Rampage. See, my brain goes to, shout out to Flipmo Squad, to the rapper Rampage. So no disrespect to Rampage. We are talking Rampage today, everyone.
Rampage. Page.
We're talking about Ann Page, which is the A&P store brand.
Thank you. Also, that will be a bonus episode. You can download that. April, you know what? You're right, April. Why don't you go ahead and give us a synopsis of the film?
Oh, shit. You always ask Alonzo, and I'm always happy about that. So there's a scientist in space, and that scientist has some samples, and she's fighting against a mega rat. And she escapes, but doesn't make it. There's samples that she saves that fly down to Earth. These mysterious samples hit in three different locations and infect three different animals. An alligator or a crocodile? What's the difference? Alligator.
I think it's an alligator because it's the Everglades.
Okay, yeah. So an alligator, a wolf, and a gorilla, and the gorilla's name is George and is best friends with The Rock. And The Rock is a primatologist who is also a special forces fighter, which is a rare combo for someone so young. And so his best friend, you know, they sign him and the gorilla back and forth. And he realizes that something's wrong with George. He has to band up with a scientist who created this thing and the evil, you know, to fight against both these animals and the evil people who want to get rich off of this, you know, basically like a weapon of mass destruction.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause these animals are rampaging.
Yes.
They're killing.
There it is.
They're killing hundreds of people. They are heading to Chicago.
Yes.
And they're going to tear Chicago apart if The Rock and his gorilla friend don't do something about it.
That's and
it.
That was the night Chicago died.
That was what happened? Oh, shit.
We don't really talk about it as much as, you know, back home. We just kind of like, oh, let's just get past it.
Yeah.
Do they say the word primatologist in the movie?
Yeah.
I think they do.
Multiple times.
They do, yeah.
Okay.
Multiple times.
But at least they don't give him like a pair of glasses or anything. It's like, no. Sure, you're a primatologist that looks like The Rock. Because of course you are.
Because and that's one of the things that they always solve that problem of The Rock looking the way he does by being like, oh, he was also special forces.
Yes.
Before the at Rock, some point in time.
The Rock has had the same wardrobe in a movie since The Rundown. It's always like a white t-shirt and like some nice pants or khakis, and he just looks amazing.
Yeah, we did a list at the Wrap. William Bibbiani get combat pay. He ranked all of the movies starring The Rock.
Oh, all right.
Oh, wow.
Including ones I'd never heard of, like Empire State. Like, okay.
Oh, wow. I don't know that one.
Anyway, and the person who did the art for it sent us all an email saying, I was very proud of myself that I found 4 shots of him not wearing a t-shirt.
What was number one?
Moana, actually.
Oh. All right. Now, have people here played the video game Rampage?
We're all looking at you.
Well, yeah, John. I'm looking at Cypress Hill. I'm looking in your direction, John.
Yes. Yes, I have played the game Rampage. I played it on the N64. The version I played was called Rampage World Tour.
Oh.
And that was in the late 90s. But this game goes back to 1981, and it's an arcade game originally where, as you might guess, you play as giant monsters that destroy buildings and eat people. And you gain points for destroying the buildings and punching them in the side. And if you punch the buildings enough, they fall down. But it is, I have to say, a fairly repetitive video game. Whether you are in Salt Lake City or Silicon Valley, those buildings kind of looked the same.
I think I would like it.
How do you die in that game? Like, how are you losing life or whatever?
Well, there are military presences that shoot you with guns and drop bombs on you. But what's interesting in this game is that the monsters are actually all people who are mutated by eating experimental vitamins. So when you are damaged enough, you don't really die. You shrink back to human form and sort of walk off the screen. The one token female character, which is the lizard, named aptly Lizzie, when she shrinks down, she is, I believe, a tiny, like, nude woman who walks off
the
screen.
They don't even get her clothes.
None of them have clothes, but I remember very specifically, because I would always play as Lizzie. Like many gay men, I always played as the one female character. So I just remember the little tiny naked people that would appear after you took enough damage.
Yeah, this is interesting.
I feel like Lizzie would like walk off like kind of like holding her like hiding her private parts.
She was hot, maybe doing that. Yeah.
And the dudes had like, I feel like one of them had like little tiny white underwear, like little tidy whities.
Something like
and
that.
And he would go off.
So like you couldn't see if they were hung or not? Or
no,
like,
and I looked.
It was teeny tiny 1981 graphics, and even on N64 it wasn't much better.
I played the video game very much in high school. It was at the 7-Eleven in my neighborhood, and when we would go on lunch, we would just go right to that 7-Eleven and play the shit out of it. I loved it because it was so simple. We were talking earlier, April, all of us, about I'm the kind of people where I can watch someone play video games. I'm not very good at them, and that one is very simple. Punch the building, grab the dude, eat him, continue. Don't get shot. It's a thing that's just kind of common is video game movies just don't seem to translate well.
Mm-mm.
Right?
I stand for Mario Brothers. I fucking love that movie. So weird.
Oh my God.
I love that movie.
What's the
directing team who did that?
Rocky Morton and Annabelle Jankel.
Whoa, they're so good.
I know this because I went out to see that movie opening weekend, not because I'd ever played Super Mario Brothers, but because I was a big fan of, they had previously done the movie DOA with Dennis Quaid.
Oh, wow.
The remake of the noir film, also a Christmas movie. And they created the Max Headroom TV show.
Oh, wow.
So, like, they were cool, those two.
They had really done cool.
Like, you know, awesome stuff. It's like, oh, whoa, they're doing a Disney movie that's based on a two. Okay, well, I'll check it out. Oh, my God.
It's so good. I mean,
no, it's not.
I think it's so good. I love it. It's like a dark, gritty Mario Brothers.
It is painful.
I actually had a lot of fun when I rewatched it and was like, this is. I remember this being interesting when I was a child. And interesting.
Okay, sure.
Interesting is a review I can stand by.
I mean, I would maybe go out on a limb and say that Rampage is the best?
I would too, actually.
Video
I would.
Game movie, but that's a good, like such a low bar.
Mm-hmm. Really,
you
is.
Know, it's like with the exception of like maybe the second Angelina Jolie Tomb Raider, like there really aren't many video game movies that don't just flat out suck. So
I really enjoyed Mortal Kombat.
I was going to say, I think Mortal Kombat was fun.
I thought that movie was pretty great because it really was like, hey, yeah, they're going to get it. It was the game. Here's an hour and here's 90 minutes of them fighting each other.
Well, it's interesting because the makers of Mortal Kombat, Midway, are also the makers of Rampage. And so what happened was for Rampage to happen, Midway tanked in the late later part of the last decade, and they sold the rights to all of their properties, including Mortal Kombat, to Warner Brothers, who made this film. And before they ended, they kind of went out with a bang, making a bunch of games. One was, like, directed by John Woo.
What?
One starred Vin Diesel, and then there was another one called, let me just look at this name again, Spy Hunter Nowhere to Run, which I actually played, but... and featured, like, hovercrafts with guns on them, but also starred Dwayne The Rock Johnson. So
it all comes back around.
So I really think that this film is in the same universe as those Midway games because he could have done everything he did in Spy Hunter as a military ops guy or whatever and then done Rampage.
And, well, I mean, and then done graduate school for primatology.
Right, exactly.
Then,
yeah.
On the GI Bill.
Yeah, yeah, and then done Rampage. Mm-hmm. But that's neat. There's a lore to this now.
I'm creating it right now.
I think the best of the video game movies are the ones that sort of use video game imagery or the ideas of it, like Wreck-It Ralph or Scott Pilgrim versus the World,
yes.
Where they sort of incorporate notions and, you know, tropes or whatever without actually having to be an adaptation.
Yeah.
Is there like a Pong game?
Not yet.
There's a Pong fan-made film. There's a Pong 15-minute fan-made film with really high production values. It's really
for
odd.
Pong?
I believe it's Pong, yeah. I think so.
Huh.
Oh, wait. No, it's Pac-Man. I'm sorry. Really high-budget Pac-Man film. But one interesting thing is Wreck-It Ralph, the wolf in Rampage, is named Ralph. And that's where they got the name for Wreck-It Ralph was from Rampage, because Wreck-It Ralph destroys buildings and so do the
Rampage. I was wondering about that. I know nothing about any of these things, but when they were like, some weirdos on the internet are calling it Ralph, I was like, Wreck-It Ralph! And then I was like, no, it's a wolf. So,
you're a wolf. Was,
you were close. You were getting something.
I'm a wolf.
Let's talk about The Rock for a minute, if we can. He's got two kinds of movies. One's where he's in the jungle, your Jumanjis, Journey to the Mysterious Island, would The Rundown be considered? I don't know. It's been a minute since I've seen The
jungle-ish.
Rundown.
But
it's
jungle.
I mean, it's like
rainforest,
it's,
right?
Yeah, it's nature. Yeah. So
trees, rock and trees,
well, foliage, like wilderness. You know.
Yes. And then he has ones where there's just a bunch of buildings getting destroyed. Your San Andreas, your upcoming skyscraper.
Mm-hmm. I got
Fast and the Furious movies.
I loved your tweet about skyscraper.
Yes. where would you put this one? Where does this one rank? Or fall under, I should say.
Well, you know, I mean, it does start in an ape preserve and end in downtown Chicago. So maybe this is the alpha and omega of The Rock's career. It's all been leading to this.
Everything's been drawing him to Chicago.
Yeah.
Bamboo and that circular parking thing on Wacker Drive, all in one movie.
My least favorite Chicago getting destroyed movie. Now, there's not a lot of them. I can only think of.
I feel like
listen,
Transformers. Well, Transformers has done it like two or three times.
Transformers is great. I was like, blow my shit up. You are handling it. But yeah, in this one, it was just like, I don't know. I was never like blown away by any of the sequences that were like happening. It felt very much like they took the template from the Transformers and didn't have as much money.
Well, I love a giant monster fight movie. Mm-hmm. Like, I am big into, like, old school Godzilla, that kind of thing. I'm down for it. And Dave, my husband, had an interesting observation about how the old kaiju movies are more like pro wrestling because it's two dudes in rubber suits facing off.
Yes.
And now that it's CG and it can be anything, that the combat is a lot more brutal. Like, it's more like, let's go for the neck, you know? And if I were a parent, I don't know that I would be as down for taking my kid to this as I would be to, like, you know, Destroy All Monsters or something.
Sure.
Can I say that I think that the gorilla got, he did not get as lucky as the wolf and the alligator in this genetic editing thing.
True. He just gets bigger. The wolf gets wings. The crocodile gets like warthog tusks. And...
Yeah, and the wolf gets like fucking porcupine stuff. Which, I mean, I'm not going to give it away, but like the way that the wolf goes, it's too easy. Wolves are very strong.
Well, I really enjoyed it because I just thought it was so stupid and like so loose, like all the stuff with the, you know, evil capitalist company where they're like, we had to have this research in outer space, like, because it wasn't for people. Or so, like, they said, like, a sentence that didn't even make sense.
None of it makes sense. Like, I kept trying to think later, like, what is their plan?
Yeah, right.
What is their goal?
Yeah, why are they making this?
Why do they want these horrible beasts to exist? And then why do they want them to come to Chicago? None of this makes sense.
And why does Jake Lacy spend a lot of the movie carrying around a rat in a box? Yes. They never explain that
It's Malin Ackerman's rat. I don't know why.
Why, though?
He doesn't even like it.
No, he doesn't like it. He doesn't even like the rat. What's that about?
I am amazed that you all know who Jason Lacy is.
Jake Lacy.
Jake Lacy. To me, he was not Jason Sudeikis. And it took me so long to figure out that was Malin Ackerman. She was not Cameron Diaz to me. I was like, oh, no, you guys couldn't get them too. But
Jake Lacy's actually a really talented, funny character actor. Like, he was an obvious child who's really great in that. And he's been turning up a lot lately as sort of like the guy who might be Republican-ish but isn't a tool.
Sure,
yes. You know, like in Love the Coopers and a lot of different movies. Like, he's somebody whose name I bothered to learn because he's actually really talented. You would never know that if you only saw him in Rampage, because totally. He and Malin Ackerman are given like the dumbest dialogue, and it's like they can't quite decide if they're going to be Batman TV show villains or what, but it's embarrassing.
I thought he was like, okay, I'm playing Jared Kushner. Like, to me, I thought he was like Jared Kushner and she was like Ivanka or something. and I thought that they were like some weird, gross couple / sister brother thing that was happening.
Yeah, this movie definitely goes in the category of, like, I enjoyed everybody in this movie. It goes in the category for me of, you all deserve to be in a better movie.
Oh, totally. Naomi Harris, for God's sake.
That was surprising that she would do this movie.
And I really hate it. I'm not going to give away the specifics, but the ending of this movie involves Naomi Harris, who's been like the super competent geneticist for the whole movie, being the butt of this really sexist joke between the
out
rock and the gorilla.
Yeah. Like, I was like, what? No.
And just being like,
on.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, you guys.
Yeah, that was so weird.
Yeah, yeah. Bad choice.
I was also just like, The Rock, I feel like someone should take you to task that you actually said those lines, that you didn't maybe say, I don't think this is a good idea for this movie.
I was like, what demographic? Who are they trying to make laugh with this joke?
It felt very 1978.
Yes, very, very, very
not
out
in
place.
The good way.
But yeah, very, very much so. Are we still okay with The Rock in general as a leading man? Sometimes I feel like we need to have an intervention with The Rock. Like, hey, not every script, Rock. You know, it's all good.
After Baywatch, I was like, it's time to get picky. But, I like him more often than I don't. And I think that when you see him in something like Central Intelligence or like Jumanji, where he's actually giving a performance and playing somebody who isn't the version of The Rock that we have gotten to know, like in the Fast and Furious movies and in other stuff, it's like, okay, sometimes you actually are going to come to play and you're going to try something different and you're going to try. And it's fun to watch and good for you.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think, you know, that we have this and Skyscraper happening in like a 3-month period. It's like, slow your roll, Dwayne.
Yeah, it kind of feels like he's the type of person who, if he isn't busy, would suddenly be alone with his thoughts and have to like
I will
to
make
terms
season
with
three
humanity.
Of Ballers.
Yeah, you know, it's just like he's like, yeah, I'll take it. I'll do anything. I'm going to work out in the gym. I'm just going to do anything to avoid my feelings or dealing with the world. That, I mean, I get it. I get it, but you know, you don't have to take every movie. You could just like go on a vacation.
Look, I'll tell you though, if those paychecks were coming my way, I'd be like, sure,
make that paper rock.
What am I? He just does not need it.
I'm fine. What? Where? With who? Okay, yes, I'm in.
He is so great. Yeah, I saw Central Intelligence recently, and he is so great at just not giving you the version of The Rock that you think you're going to get.
Yeah.
And he's, to me, he's still like an old school movie star. Because, he's like a Schwarzenegger type, you know?
He's charismatic. I love that you think Schwarzenegger is an old school movie star, by the way.
I meant that as like,
Turner Classic Movies. You should check it out.
Kindergarten Cop.
If you turned it on and it was like Kindergarten Cop? You'd be like, there you go, Alonzo, yes. I told you.
No, but yeah, he's like, he's often in on the joke, which is always great. But at the same time, he's a physical presence. He has a sense of humor. He's charming. You know, he checks all the boxes.
Rate him against John Cena real quick, because I have some...
I'm sorry.
Rate him against John Cena as an actor.
I think John Cena is more of a character actor at this point. Like, he's actually like a really funny, comedic, second banana slash ensemble player. I think he had his moments of trying to be The Rock, and that didn't really work out.
But the Marine. He did the movie.
Exactly, the Marine. Wow, like the, you know, seven shots or so, seven blocks.
I don't know.
Something. It had a number in it. Anyway, I think he's now figuring out, no, I should just stick with the Judd Apatow crew and be... you know, funny for 20 minutes.
I want him to do a Twins remake.
Ooh. I was about to say, I don't think I've seen John Cena in something, but then I remember he's one of the funniest things
and
in
Blockers.
The...
And Blockers. And
Blockers.
Yeah,
but
and Trainwreck.
Amy Schumer.
Trainwreck, yes.
Yeah.
He's fucking hilarious in that movie.
Oh, you should see Blockers. It's funny.
Blockers
that's,
is
man,
funny.
That's... I'm disappointed that I have not seen that movie yet. I will be handling it. All right, well... For the film Rampage, what do we think? Should the people screen it, stream it, or skip it? John, what do you think?
I think you should screen it because, you know, it's a big action, you know, over-the-top movie that, you know, you get a lot more of just the sound and the visceralness of it in a theater. You know, there were moments of this film where I was genuinely surprised or jumped in my seat and not a million, but I do think that it is much more enjoyable in the theater than it would be at home.
Mm-hmm. I'd say stream it with like close friends and your choice of intoxicants. It's not totally unfun, but it's kind of whatever.
Yeah. April?
Stream it. Be at home with some people you love. Put it on. It's good. It's okay. Nothing special, but, you know, if you want like a crazy Saturday night.
Woo!
Yeah, stream it.
Will I be the rare skip it?
Oh,
I think I will say skip this movie. Oh.
Not going to fight you on this.
Yeah, I'm not either.
Sometimes I'm too nice on this show, and I'm trying to change my ways, y'all. And yeah, like, as soon as it was over, I was like, we're just going to shovel that out of our brains so it's not taking up any space. And,
did I just see a movie?
Yeah. I was
It's more space for the Mario Brothers movie.
Oh, why am I not watching Mario Brothers right now? John Leguizamo's best work? That's...
Oh, hey.
No disrespect.
Hey.
No disrespect to the pest.
I was going
to
say the pest.
Oh, I'll call Benny Blanco from the Bronx, yo.
Venom. Spawn.
Spawn, yes, Spawn. Yes. The clown Spawn. All right, we are going to take a break, y'all. When we come back, we'll be joined by Drea the Dope Rhyme Slayer. You're listening to Who Shot Ya?
I love it.
Good stuff.
Every time.
Well, I hope that you're enjoying this podcast you're listening to as much as we are pretending to. But anyway, why not listen to another podcast, too? It's called The Flophouse.
And on our podcast, we have recently watched a movie, often a bad movie, and we review it on our podcast, but mainly talk about other stuff and, I don't know, hang out.
It's all about hanging out, feeling like you're being with your best friends. Who are your best friends? Us three. Dan McCoy, Emmy Award-winning writer for The Daily Show, Stuart Wellington, owner of the best bar in Brooklyn, Hinterlands, and Elliot Kalin. former Emmy-winning head writer for The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, former head writer of Mystery Science Theater 3000, The Return, so many things. Author of the upcoming children's book,
All Right, that's enough.
The Elliott's credits just go on and on.
Yeah, but if you like the idea of listening to three funny guys talk about bad movies, then why not come over and listen to The Flophouse? It's available at MaximumFun.org or wherever fine podcasts are found.
So get out of here.
Welcome back to Who Shall Ya? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining me in the studio today are...
Johnny Jungle Guts.
Yeah. Alonzo Duraldi.
April Wolf.
Hey, this past week, our fellow co-host of Who Shall Ya? Drea Clark caught up with Brady Jandro, who stars in the indie film The Writer. I haven't seen it, but it was Ingu's staff pick last week, and April and Drea both say it's dope. April, before we listen to Drea's conversation with Brady, what is it about The Writer that has all three of you giving it all of the props?
Well, you know, Ingu had discussed this a little bit on our last episode, but it is this kind of magical, natural realism that you don't get often from filmmakers. You have this filmmaker, Chloe Zhao, who goes and lives on this reservation with these rodeo cowboys, and she becomes part of their community to kind of be like a fly on the wall, is she has them kind of reenact versions of themselves. And so there's a lot of real realism in this. And Brady Jandro, who Drea talked to, he is so charismatic as a lead. He has not acted before ever. He is a literal like rodeo cowboy, right? But his face on the screen and what he can portray and what he can express with just his eyes, he's captivating. And it's this kind of presence that you just don't often find, you know. And I can easily see why Chloe Zhao was like, yes, this is going to be the lead in my story. Yep. He's a quiet cowboy who doesn't find romance for salvation. I hate cowboy stories where like the only thing that will, you know, save them is just like the love of a good woman, you know. it's dumb, and you know, it's also like it's overplayed. Yep. But this is him finding salvation in his family, his friends, and the land that he loves. And it's such a love letter to these things, and it's such a struggle for him to overcome. But you're cheering him on every step of the way.
All right, excellent. All right, well, let's take a listen to Drea Clark's interview with Brady Jandro.
We're joined today by Brady Jandro of the indie film The Writer. It's the story of a young cowboy, Brady Blackburn, who'd made a name for himself as a riding star of the rodeo circuit, riding broncos, until a tragic accident eliminates any possibility for Brady to pursue a future in this dangerous sport. The film opens on Brady peeling back bandages from a large wound on the side of his head, revealing a line of surgical staples from recent surgery. Throughout the film, we follow Brady as he tries to find a new purpose in his life now that he can no longer pursue his life's calling. Brady, welcome to Who Shot Ya?
Thank you.
They're not kidding. It really is. You start the film, there's some beautiful images of a horse, and then it is just you waking up with your head, and this is very real. If this was a high-budget film, these would be fake, but these are very real staples in your very real head, which tells me that the director had some sort of connection and intimacy with you to be able to get to that point right away. I know that you met the director, Chloe Zhao, when she did her first film, and then you had this accident happen to you in real life. Can you talk about the time between when you went through your accident and Chloe coming to you and wanting to kind of fictionalize it and make a film?
Well, I met Chloe on about April, the beginning of April of 2015, and I sustained my accident on April Fool's Day of 2016. So I'd known her for about a full year at that point. And, you know, I mean, we got along very well. She actually learned how to ride horses. You know, she told us she was a director. She talked to me about possibly playing a role in the film that she was working on. And she didn't really have a story at that point, but she, you know, went with a couple different things and thought about some different ideas. And then after my head injury, everything got put on hold because one thing that drew Chloe to me was my, you know, rodeoing and training horses. And both of those things I could not pursue at that point. So a month and a half after my injury, I went flat broke. And The doctors told me I wasn't supposed to lift over 10 pounds or even jog for like at least 3 months, and then I would have to be cleared to do so. And then, but I went flat broke, and I'm not the guy who sticks his hand out, and I was so happy to be out of that hospital, and, you know, I knew what I had to do, and that was to go back to training horses. Chloe found out about this through Facebook, actually, and she called me about it, and she was like, "Bro, Brady, you could die. Don't you know that?" And I was like, "Well, yeah, but I don't feel alive not being able to ride." And so, you know.
Did you post something about wanting to get back to horses?
No, I posted just a video, and I tagged a client who sent me a horse to break and a video of their horse reacting very well to my training, doing a good job. Coming along quite smoothly, and Chloe seen that, and she thought it was a video from, like, previously, before the accident, and I told her, no, this is from yesterday.
Oh, wow. I will say some of the videos, or both the videos of watching yourself in it are fascinating, but one of the parts of the films that's so exciting to someone like me, it is a whole new world. Like, in some ways, this is a science fiction to a girl who's never been anywhere near horses or horses being trained like that. And it's such a cool way into learning about that. Those horses, there's a few that you work with. Apollo, obviously, is someone, a horse that comes back a few times. But the very first horse that you show that you're training, there's a very real wildness to them. Were those horses that had been broken? Were they? Because you can't really fake that, can you? You know, the scenes of you training these horses are so legitimate.
Yeah, you can't just tell a horse to be like, okay, now action, you know, and you know, get into character. No, it doesn't work that way.
Act wild again.
Yeah, those were all wild horses that I was working with in the film.
That's amazing. And Apollo especially, it's because you have a longer storyline with him. There's such a nice, you can get such a, it gives you an idea of the personality of these horses, that they're very real characters and creatures along with, you know, the people that you're interacting with.
Definitely.
Is that something that you as a horse trainer, like that's how you think of them as? They have a personality.
And I feel like I can connect with horses better than I can with people.
Well, I've met a lot of people, so I can see why that would probably be lower on the list. Now, are you someone who, did you watch a lot of movies before on your own? Like, did
no,
you see?
You know, I mean, I think everybody's probably seen a movie or two, but I mean, I probably am on the lower end of that list.
Okay. Because one of the things, you know, we've talked about the word authenticity a lot, and it's so real. And like I said, for me, if I'm coming up and what I know of, it's not of rodeo necessarily, but of like Westerns and your John Waynes, and there's something so different about what the movie portrayal of any kind of that world is versus the real life of that world.
See, it's, she really wanted to not romanticize the idea of a Western or of Native Americans. She wanted it to be a movie about people, you know.
Yeah, which is great because then more people can take something away from it.
Mm-hmm.
Did it change how you, if you have watched movies since then on all your flights, does it change how you think about movies that other people are making or performing in?
I've been watching a lot of, you know, this whole deal's kind of sparked a whole new interest with me with this whole acting stuff, and you know, I've been. You know, after being on a shoot and stuff and doing this movie, I've been, you know, watching a lot of, you know, actors and stuff and, you know, with their performances, and I'm able to realize actually how the whole thing is put together now. And
it changes, right? It changes how you see things.
Yeah.
Did you find that, you know, we were talking about this earlier, that the performances that are people consider to be, you know, the best acting are often the ones that are just most comfortable. And I think it's one of the reasons you're so good in this film is you're comfortable with the camera and you're comfortable with the horses and the people around you. Was there a level of sort of learning to get to that comfort level with the camera?
You know, ever since I was probably, you know, at a very young age, I used to worry about what people thought about me, you know, almost like to a self-conscious point. And, I don't know for what reason, but it was right around the time I started, you know, training actual, like, full-size horses to be trained when I was about 8 years old. I just kind of give up on caring what people thought about me, and, like, entirely almost.
Yeah.
I could really care less. As long as I'm good by me, then that's all that matters.
That's That's actually great advice for actors. I mean, it's good advice for people to live their lives, I think. You know, if you're not hurting anybody, and then you should just be able to be good by you. Do you have interest in performance and in doing other roles?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. You know, I mean, honestly, some of my favorite scenes were the ones that were completely fictionalized, like such as like the grocery store scenes and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It was harder to get myself there, you know, but out of my element, it was fun, you know.
Right.
It was enjoyable.
That's interesting that would be one of the harder scenes, because you have, to me, what would be the most difficult, which is just a camera close up on you as you are in your car and you kind of break down in tears. I'm like, oh, that's the holy grail, right? For an actor to believably be in that moment. But you think that came easier to you than the other bits?
Well, you know, I mean, it was just me and Chloe were in the vehicle. We're the only ones in the vehicle at the time. And, you know, I've always was comfortable with Chloe, and I'm not scared of the camera. And Chloe actually talked to me about a time from my childhood. There was a colt. Its mother passed away while giving birth to it, and I raised it on a bottle, and it was weaned that fall and turned out to pasture, like with the rest of them. And it fell through the ice of a dam and drowned. And Chloe talked to me about that, actually, to trigger me to cry.
It's a terrible story, and I can see why that would work. But it's also, it's good that you're able to process things in those ways. Not a lot of people can make that thread, you know, connecting something sad that happened to them to, you know, on screen.
Well, I believe after, you know, in the healing process of my injury, you know, I was such an emotional wreck, and there were so many ups and downs, and, you know, I was almost, I was always feeling the wrong way, you know, whether the situation, I was never, my emotions were never key to the situation after my head injury. I was so distant, like happy at the wrong time, sad at the wrong times, you know, so to speak. And I feel like I had to regain a whole new harness on my emotions. And I also believe that helped me to act in this movie.
That's really interesting. Did you find similarities between being a cowboy and being an actor, like being, you know, making a movie and training a horse? Like,
Definitely. Not necessarily being a cowboy. But, I mean, when I'm at a rodeo, you know, there's all those eyes on me. People are announcing my name. There's cameras on me. I'm on a wild horse that if I lose my concentration for a second, I could, you know, even die. So, you know, and like training horses, you have to be so present, so there with them and so connected, or else you could be, you know, killed as well. You know, but so,
Being present in the moment
is acting.
Yeah.
You have to, you know, it's just all about the way you portray yourself. And when you're training a horse, you're portraying yourself, you know, if you're showing the horse or if you're doing something with the horse. So it's almost like you're acting twice then. And like when you're selling a horse, which is one thing I do a lot, you know, you have to present the, you know, yourself to the person as well, and to the horse, and you present the horse to the person, you know.
It's
all just presentation.
Yeah, it's a very unique way into the acting experience, but a pretty straight line, actually. Well, I'm a huge fan of this movie, and I think you are amazingly talented, both with horses and on screen. So I hope that you have such a great, great ride with it. Pardon the pun. And I can't wait to see what you do next.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming.
I'm really happy you enjoyed the film.
A big thank you to Drea Clark joining us there and interviewing Brady Jandreau. Also, thank you to Brady Jandreau for being on the show there. That was fantastic. If people want to check out The Writer opens wide May 18th. Well, it is time for our staff picks, y'all. Every week we ask the panel to tell us about a movie we think folks should check out, any movie at all. John, you are a guest. I will start off with you, sir.
Well, I've been thinking about what my favorite video game film is, and there are not a lot of good ones, but the one that comes immediately to mind is Street Fighter II, the animated movie.
Oh, I thought you were going to say The Legend of Chun-Li.
Not The Legend of Chun-Li with Kristen Crook.
And Chris Klein.
But it is timely. Connected to Nicki Minaj's new song, Chun-Li. There's a... which is pretty good.
Yes.
There's a scene in Street Fighter II, the animated movie, where Vega is sent to kill Chun-Li in her apartment. And the way they set up the scene is Chun-Li has just, like, taken a shower, so it's kind of that bad exploitative thing. And then Guile is racing to her house in his car. And so you think either one of two things is going to happen, because they've sort of set it up in this psycho Alfred Hitchcock type of way, is that she's either going to die or Guile's going to save her. But what ends up happening is very different than that. And I just think something about the sort of determination and desperation that they sort of convey in this anime movie that Chun-Li has just to be alive really spoke to me as like a little gay child. And I would recommend that movie just on that incredibly intense scene alone.
Oh, word. That's what's up. Alonzo, what do you got for the people?
Well, Outfest has been doing a partnership with Amazon Prime and quite a few, it's like something like 50 or 60 Outfest alum films are available on Amazon Prime streaming. A lot of really great titles. The one I want to pick out is a film by Ingrid Jungerman called Women Who Kill, which was up for a Spirit Award this year. It's a very funny movie about two exes who host a true crime podcast, two lesbians, and one of them starts dating a mysterious new woman who might be a serial killer?
What?
Question mark. It's very funny and smart, and Ingrid Jungerman is a talent to watch, and it's a really terrific movie. If you missed it, it is now streaming on Amazon.
Boy, thank you, sir. April.
I've been having to watch a lot of TV shows and documentaries lately. So I've got a documentary for people. Netflix has one coming out called Mercury 13. And it's about, I think it was 1961, these women who, I have to get it right, it's for the Mercury program. They had to do all of these rigorous tests to try to, like, test for this thing, you know, with NASA, and people keep blocking it along the way. So it's a really great lesson of, like, 1961 history for women in the space program and what women had to go through to try to make it into space, which is a lot of fucking bullshit.
This is training to be astronauts, or?
Yeah, this is them, I think, training to be, like, scientists and astronauts, just basically working with NASA.
Hmm. Okay.
Cool.
And it's on Netflix now, or it's going to be on Netflix?
I think it's the 20th. I had to look up the date of it. I watched it a while ago, and I think it's 420.
Yeah, man. 420, man. I said it.
420 is the best time to learn about women in history.
Space.
Spaced out, man.
Spaced.
Over the weekend, I went and saw a really fun movie. It was popping up in my Twitter feed. And then somebody said, hey, let's go see this movie. It's called The Endless. And I said, oh, it's kind of like popping up in my feed. And he sent me like a review of it. And he said, you know, don't read too much about it. So I went and looked in the review. And all I saw was UFO death cult. And I was like...
Was it my review?
It was not.
Oh, okay.
But I will go. I will read your review now. And I was like, that's all I need to see. I'm all in on this movie. It's really great. The less you know about it, the better. Like, I mean, you should just know that it's about two brothers who escape a cult, and now years later, they have decided to go back. One of them wants to go back and just touch base with them once again after receiving a mysterious tape. And then... shit gets crazy.
Actually,
have you seen this movie?
Yeah.
I was thinking, I was as soon as it was over, I was like...
No, she reviewed it, but she hasn't seen it.
Oh, that, my dumb ass. My dumb, come on, Ricky. We were talking about 420, man. My head got all loopy.
No, it's a sequel in a way to this directing duo's first feature, which is like a super, super low budget one where they were like, you don't need to see it beforehand because no one saw it and it doesn't matter. If you do, then maybe you'll have some more of the lore, but it's not necessary. They just wanted to like, they were like, we love this idea and we want to revisit it. And
so this is the Evil Dead 2.
And Yes, exactly.
See, and when I hear conversations, all the words that I like are mentioned with these dudes. Evil Dead 2, that's what I'm talking
UFO
about.
UFO death cult.
UFO death
there.
Cult. It really reminded me of Primer. I am a big fan of the movie Primer. And this one, again, not giving anything away, is just has that kind of like
a little more whimsical.
I watch this
a little funnier, I would say, than the, like,
oh, much
it's
funnier.
So much,
yes.
Like the conversations with these two brothers are hilarious and so realistic as
yes.
brothers as siblings. It's like oh yes,
yeah,
okay,
yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm the youngest brother, and I was like, oh no, I get what's going on in this motherfucker's mind. Oh, absolutely. Next week we will be talking about I Feel Pretty with Drea Clark and the Velvet Lawnmower, Dave White. Do we know him?
I've never heard of him.
I forgot what I called Dave on the show, but he will now forever be known as the Velvet Lawnmower. That's a solid name. Hey, if you like what you're hearing, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. 5-star reviews get a shout-out on the show. We don't have any 5-star reviews this week. Any new ones? I'm going to assume it's because you all opted out to support the show during the Max Fun Drive.
Yeah.
Yes,
thank you.
Yes. Thank you to everyone who donated. We really appreciate it.
We do.
Big time. If you didn't donate and you're feeling extra guilty about it now that the drive is over, hey, leave us a 5-star review. Don't have acid. Just give us a good shout-out, and you shall be forgiven. John, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. It's my pleasure.
Absolutely. We'd love to have you back. Is there anything you want to plug on the show?
Oh, yeah. I mean, check out my podcast, Super Gay, a podcast for comic book gays, where we talk about all things gay in comics and more, but mostly comics. That's on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn and all that good stuff.
That's what's up. Alonzo, I got good memory. I believe you wanted to plug something.
I want to give a shout. I'm not. Yeah. The reason that Dave is here next week, I'm going to be in Dallas, Texas for the USA Film Festival, which I used to program back in the day. And I still love going back every year and seeing great movies and, you know, running into all of my old friends there and eating chicken fried steak. So if you are in Dallas next week, I believe it is April 25th. Through the 29th, come check out, come to the Angelica, check out Movies at the USA Film Festival. It's going to be off the hook.
That's what's up.
I guess I'm too.
Yeah, like everybody gets to plug shit now.
On Saturday the 21st, if y'all are in LA, then you should come to the LA Times Festival of Books because I'll be in conversation with Diana Gabaldon, the woman who created the Outlander series, both the book and the TV show.
Nice.
So we'll be doing like an hour long kind of like craft talk of interesting stuff of how she adapted her books to screen.
Yeah. Shit, I got something to promote now, too. Hey, I'll be DJing this Friday night in Echo Park at Little Joy. So if you want to come get your dance on, come on out. It's going to be fun. I'm going to play some hot funk disco shit. Ooh, Ricky! All right, calm down. hey, check out our Facebook group. If you haven't subscribed yet, handle that at facebook.com/groups/ Who Shot Your Podcast. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, you can tweet us at Who Shot Your Pod, or you can send us an email at whoshotya@maximumfun.org. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. This is a production of MaximumFun.org, and that's what's up.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.